Last year, we said goodbye to a number of remarkable Iowans. This hour, we remember some of them by looking back at their lives. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we hear about several notable Iowans who passed away in 2018 by listening to excerpts of archive interviews with them or by speaking to people who knew them well. We'll hear about Iowa's longest-serving state Supreme Court Justice Jerry Larson, civil rights and education advocate Betty Jean Ferguson, syndicated columnist Donald Call, and former U.S. Congressman Leonard Boswell. Others as well. First, this news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In this hour, we remember some of the notable people we lost in 2018. We said goodbye to syndicated columnist and RagBrite co-founder Donald Call. He died in July of last year at the age of 83. In just a moment, I'll be joined by former Des Moines Register columnist Kyle Munson to talk about Donald Call. Joining me now to talk about Donald Call's life, especially his role in creating the Register's annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa, RagBri, is T.J. Juskowitz. He's RagBri's director. T.J., welcome back to the program.
Hey, Ben. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. So let's go back to the beginning. Tell us how RagBri got started and Donald Call's role in it.
Sure. Well, there was two folks at the Des Moines Register, John Karras and Donald Call, and they just were kind of avid cyclists at that time. Really not a whole lot of people were into cycling that much. And basically they challenged each other, hey, let's ride our bikes across our great state and invite some of the readers that want to join us to join us. And they never felt that this would be an event or anything like that. They just wanted the Register to pay for their week-long bike trek across the state. And little did they know, 144 people showed up to join them, and it actually peaked at about 500 people. So once they had this little, you know, excursion across the state, it kind of became legendary, and they begged them to do it again and again and again, and here we are 47 years later, and RagBri is still as strong as ever.
RagBri Director T.J. Juskowitz, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben.
Well, let's continue our remembrance of syndicated columnist and RagBri co-founder Donald Call by talking with Kyle Munson, former Iowa columnist with the Des Moines Register. He's now with the Principal Financial Group. Hi, Kyle.
Oh, hi, Ben.
Months before his death, when you were still with the Des Moines Register and Donald Call knew he was dying of prostate cancer, you spoke with him about RagBri and his journalism career. A tremendous column was yielded from that conversation. What do you remember most about that?
Well, just it was classic Call. I mean, his wit endured to the end. He was always so brutally honest with himself, with his readers, and that's why people loved him. And when I talked to him, he said, you know, I'm 83 years old. I'm playing with house money.
Right.
His voice carried through to the end.
Mm-hmm. You wrote in your column about him, just to really summarize, a very long career in far too quick of a time. You wrote, at the start of the 1960s, he was a young reporter who chased fires and other breaking news for the Des Moines Afternoon Daily, the Tribune. By the end of the decade, he took glee in setting rhetorical fires by following his own whims. Take us through his life very quickly.
Yeah, he was just one of those newspaper men who became a columnist when journalism was really feeling its power, the Watergate era. So, you know, he was there in 1968 for the riots at the Democratic Convention. He became this beloved columnist as the Nixon administration and Watergate played out. And that's, you know, his playful cynicism is another way I guess I could describe it, really just gave him a following not only in Iowa but around the country, because he was with the Register and then he was based in Washington for much of his career, even when RagBri was becoming a cultural force that he was a part of. And he once playfully described himself in the back of one of his books as, a missing spokesman for bicyclists and a Pulitzer Prize losing Washington columnist, devil may care speller. So he had this, like I say, he had this funny, brutal honesty in everything he did.
If you didn't read his columns over the decades, here's one excerpt from one. I saw Des Moines' civil defense apparatus at close hand Sunday as the city responded to a mock tornado. The drill was designed to determine the city's readiness to deal with a natural disaster. Pray for nice weather.
The ability to say so much in few words. I love that.
Right. Here's another. When I first learned that the Iowa legislature had raised its pay to $5,500 a session, I was pleased. Then I found out that each member was to get that much.
It's always colorful.
Always colorful. Back to your comment about Ragbri to finish our conversation, Kyle. He is always going to be linked with Ragbri, this cultural institution, bike ride across Iowa. As you are, you have made that part of your columnist career as well. Here's something that in the article you wrote about Donald Call, you quoted him as saying, the Ragbri duo didn't figure on it being a life sentence. We thought of it as a one-shot deal with two or three riders accompanying us across the state on a semi-private ride. Now we feel like Dr. Frankenstein. So he 10 years after this thing started and exploded into a cultural institution, he retired from it, right? Mixed feelings.
So with both him and Karras as sort of the Lennon McCartney of Ragbri. I think a lot of creators, when they put something out there that takes on a life of its own, they get to a point of sometimes having reservations, and he definitely hit that point. He retired, but then later on in his life and career, he came back to I think it's fair to say to appreciate and revere Ragbri again. But whatever it is. The Sherlock Holmes, suffered a death and then was brought back. Things that take on a life the way that Ragbri does, and where you have a couple of journalists who just want to get out of work one summer and go right across the state and end up creating a cultural phenomenon, you can't help but sometimes just look at what you created and wonder, he needed a break, and he took it, I remember seeing his face projected on the screen in downtown Cedar Rapids for the 40th anniversary celebration of Ragbri that year in 2012. And there was a video greeting that he gave to the throng of riders in downtown Cedar Rapids. And I remember just exactly what you're speaking to. I remember thinking about whether it was the creation of Ragbri or when he bowed out of the ride, just never imagining that his face would be in downtown Cedar Rapids looking at all these people who were celebrating something that never could have been imagined.
Right. Kyle Munson, thank you for taking a few moments to remember Donald Call. We lost Donald in 2018. He died in July of 2018 at the age of 83. We could go on and on sharing quotes from Donald Call, talking about his themes. What a remarkable individual. Kyle Munson, former Iowa columnist with the Des Moines Register, thank you for taking a few moments to remember Donald Call.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, remembering some Iowans who passed in 2018. In April, Iowa's longest-serving state Supreme Court Justice, Jerry L. Larson, died. He was 81. Larson served on the Iowa Supreme Court from 1978 to 2008. That's longer than any other justice, and he authored some 991 opinions during that time. Joining us now to remember him, Tamara Barrett, executive assistant with the Iowa Supreme Court. Tamara worked with the former justice as an executive assistant 27 of his 29 years on the bench. Tamara, welcome to the program, and I'm very sorry about the loss of what seems to be a beloved man and a man to work with.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about Jerry Larson's contributions to justice.
I'd like to say, first of all, that it's important to know who Jerry was, to know what his contributions to justice were. As a person, he was unpretentious. He was personable. He was kind. He was very intelligent, very knowledgeable, so down to earth. And I think that that came through on every decision that he wrote. His decisions were always done with great thoughtfulness. He was always aware of how it would affect the parties, of course. Mm-hmm. And he always chose law clerks that would be willing to challenge him on any aspect of the law in a case, so that he had a full knowledge of what was going on.
Mm-hmm. I read too, and perhaps you can elaborate on this, that he was a justice who knew that he had great power, but really did not like to use it unnecessarily, to flaunt it. And he did not like seeing that in other judicial situations.
That is very true. He didn't like to see any of that in any of the justices that he worked with. And he was willing to say so to them. Mm. But he did it in such a kind and clear way. It was never offensive. He was absolutely never offensive in how he approached when he was writing a dissent to someone else's decision, and when he talked to them about that. He was a real diplomat.
Mm-hmm. I understand he also was a great mentor to many who are still in our justice system.
That's true. He mentored 25 law clerks. And any one of them will tell you that they learned as much about life as they did about the law. And they, for the most part, remained friends with him his entire life.
Mm-hmm. Tamara, before we say goodbye, just looking at the judicial landscape, not only in Iowa, but across the country, it really sounds like Jerry Larson had a lot of qualities that we could really use in greater amounts in our whole judicial system.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I think that, excuse me, there's so much to be learned from his approach to, virtually everything he did. And I know it sounds like I make him out to be a saint, but I'm Catholic. I would put him up for sainthood. I just thought that he was a wonderful, wonderful person who really showed others how they could do the job.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for helping us remember former State Supreme Court Justice Jerry L. Larson, who died in 2018 in April at the age of 81. Thank you so much, Tamara Barrett, Executive Assistant with the Iowa Supreme Court, for this remembrance of Jerry Larson.
Thank you for asking me.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Gil Kranberg passed away in March of 2018. He was 93 years old. Kranberg's career as an editorial writer and editorial page editor for the Des Moines Register spanned 33 years. He was remembered as a bright, highly ethical newsman, and much of his work focused on civil rights, inequality, and criminal justice. Shortly after his passing, in March of 2018, I spoke with his daughter, Marcia Kranberg. After offering condolences, I asked how her father first got into journalism.
Gee, that's a good question. He just had a very curious mind. He had an extremely intellectual father. He served in the infantry in World War II, and so at a very young age traveled to the Pacific, where he participated in landings on Okinawa and Leyte. And I think that just sort of piqued his curiosity about the world. And he grew up in a very intellectual household with full of books and conversation. His father was a very progressive man. And he, after the war, he returned to traveling and lived abroad in Hungary and Spain, So I think he just had an extremely curious mind and also was raised with a passion for justice and perhaps felt that journalism would be a vehicle to help him accomplish that.
All the tributes I see to your father applaud him for his extremely high ethics. One I noted was that after he editorialized for lowering the speed limit, this was after the first sort of fuel crisis in the 70s, lowering it to 55 miles per hour, he refused to drive over 55 miles per hour because he'd editorialized for that lower speed limit. Where did he get these high ethics? It must have been a tremendous power in your family being raised by such a father.
Again, I guess perhaps his own father, who was an unusual person. And in fact, I've been packing up my father's belongings the last couple of days, and it's shelves upon shelves of works of philosophy. And so I'm not really certain that something in the way he was raised. He was raised in an immigrant neighborhood, a fairly poor neighborhood in the Bronx, and he just came by it naturally, I guess. I do have to say, I'm afraid I do recall his occasionally driving faster than 55 miles an hour, but perhaps not often.
All right. You know, he's being applauded for his professional achievements, but you as his daughter have, I'm sure, so many personal memories that you will cherish of your father. Can you leave us with a personal memory?
I think it would be just overall as kind of a role model, and I think it's really wonderful for kids to grow up in a household where the parent is somebody you truly admire, and I've just always admired my father very much, and he sort of had a combination of, you referred to him as being very ethical. He also was quite intellectual, and he was extremely modest and sort of unflappable, and then on top of all that, he just had a tremendous sense of humor. So the package was really a wonderful package to have as a child, his humor really just infused our household, and it imbued a lot of his writing. And in fact, just going through a lot of his papers, I see a lot of half-written nubs of ideas that had a lot of humor in them. I don't even know if they ever saw the light of day, but he was a lot of fun.
My conversation with Marcia Cranberg, remembering her father, Gil Cranberg, who died in March of 2018. This hour on River to River, a survey of remembrances of some notable people who passed away in the year 2018. Dan Miller, former executive director and general manager of Iowa Public Television, died in the spring of 2018. He was 66 years old. And at the end of his life, he battled multiple system atrophy, a rare disease sometimes described as Parkinson's on speed. Shortly after his death, I asked IPR's Dean Borg to remember Dan Miller and talk about his leadership and legacy. Dean, you were a longtime friend of Dan Miller, very close friend of his, and very sorry for your loss of your friend.
It is a big personal loss, Ben, but the bigger loss, even though mine is enormous, I feel, is to the state of Iowa and to public television. Not only Iowa Public Television, but PBS, the entire nation's PBS system. He was a leader.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about when we enjoy PBS, Iowa Public Television, now and in years to come. What parts of that and what part of that formation can we thank Dan Miller for?
I think other than the very foundation of Iowa Public Television, because there were executive directors before him, but Dan, and I've spent more than 45 years with Iowa Public Television, so I saw the evolution from when it was just Channel 11 in Des Moines to now the statewide network, and I've seen Dan Miller's influence on that in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. And it's just been enormous because during his career, digital high-definition television came in, and I remember Dan saying to me, "Dean, we're going to have the ability to transmit multiple channels. We can have our main channel, but we can also have .1, .2, .3. And where are we going to get that content?" And so, but he mastered it. And he mastered the enhancement of existing programs. Iowa Press was already there maybe about 4 years old when Dan first came on staff, but Dan took it like it was his child, and he nurtured that program to where it is today as a very prominent public affairs program in Iowa, market to market the same way. And I could name others in new programs that have come online.
Mm-hmm. Do you have another story about Dan Miller for that you can leave us with as we come to the end of this conversation that can really illustrate, perhaps for someone who never met Dan Miller, the sort of guy he was?
Well, I do many, many stories, of course, but his legacy is integrity. There was no compromising with integrity, editorial integrity, with Dan Miller. He vigorously defended the independence of Iowa Public Television against any inroad by government officials or anything like that, trying to control programming or influence with special guests, things like that. He vigorously defended that. He also vigorously enforced editorial integrity among those people who are on the air. He didn't want any equivocation, I guess is a good word. He didn't want any equivocation. In fact, one of his favorite phrases was, "Perception, Dean, is reality. What people think they might see, they actually believe is true." Well, you may think that you don't have any outside influence. Viewers may, and I don't ever want that at Iowa Public Television.
Mm. Dean Borg, thank you for helping us remember Dan Miller. Dean Borg, longtime friend, close friend of Dan Miller, former executive director, general manager of Iowa Public Television. He died at the age of 66. Dean Borg, thank you for sharing professional and personal memories of Dan Miller.
Thank you, Ben.
Another notable figure who died in 2018, John Culver, a Democrat who represented Iowa in Congress for 16 years, first in the House and then in the U.S. Senate. Here's Senator Charles Grassley paying tribute to John Culver on the Senate floor.
John's life reminds all of us that a life spent in service of others is a life well lived. John's tireless efforts to serve his country and the people of Iowa will be long remembered and serve as an example to all who honor his memory.
John Schultz also died in 2018. John was a jazz keyboardist who played with a number of Eastern Iowa bands. Here he is playing keys and singing at an Iowa City Summer of the Arts Festival show in 2009. After a short break, we continue our remembrances of people we lost in 2018. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, remembering some of the people who passed away in 2018. Leonard Boswell died this past year, the former U.S. Congressman, former president of the Iowa Senate, farmer, soldier, served 16 years in Congress from 1997 to 2013. His death came in August. He was 84 years old. 8 days after Leonard Boswell died, his wife, Dodie, She was a longtime teacher in Lomoni, died as well. Joining us to remember the congressman and his wife, U.S. Representative Dave Loebsack of Iowa's 2nd Congressional District. Congressman Loebsack, welcome to the program.
I appreciate you having me on.
Your tenure in the House up to the present day, you overlapped a bit with Leonard Boswell's tenure in the House. He served from 1997 to 2013 during his political career, focusing on agriculture, as you might expect, but also securing services for veterans and their families, helping college students with financial aid. He served in the military for 20 years in the U.S. Army, rising to the rank of lieutenant colonel, served 2 1-year tours of duty as an assault helicopter pilot in Vietnam, 2 NATO tours of duty in Europe. So that was a big part of his service to our country as well.
Well, and you know, when I first got into Congress, the last thing I expected was that a fellow member of the Iowa delegation might know some Portuguese. I had been to Brazil quite a bit, but he knew some Portuguese, having been in the Azores as part of the NATO tour.
Wow.
So Leonard really, there was so much about him that a lot of folks didn't know, and you know, his bravery was just quite amazing. He had 2 Distinguished Flying Crosses, 2 Bronze Stars, not one, a Soldier's Medal. He was an American hero, and he proved that in Vietnam. If anybody's ever been on one of those helicopters from that time period, and I was one time while I was in Pakistan visiting our troops,
mm-hmm.
Those were very dangerous missions, as you might imagine. And every time he went up, he literally took his life into his own hands, and he was very vulnerable in those helicopters doing the things that he did in Vietnam. So I think that part of his life is really quite underappreciated, unless you're a veteran or you know something about what he went through. And I really want to emphasize that part of his life.
And we know Leonard Boswell in Congress for a federal law bearing the name of an Army reservist from Grundy Center who took his own life in 2005 after returning from Iraq, Congressman, don't we know that? He took care of veterans and the most modern problems of veterans returning from the battlefields.
And, you know, being a Vietnam veteran, Leonard understood what those folks went through. When they came home, they were so underappreciated. In Iowa, not quite as much as other parts of America, but they were very much underappreciated. And then many of them actually began to access the VA system later in life, and Leonard was there to try to help them do that as much as he possibly could, having been a Vietnam veteran himself. So he understood a lot of the issues facing those folks, the fact that when they came home, you know, they were not treated particularly well. They were not appreciated, as I said. But over time, you know, that has begun to change. But those Vietnam veterans and the Korean War veterans, for that matter, too, we need to make sure that we hold them up in particular because of the way that we treated them when they came home, and it wasn't with the respect and the dignity that they deserved. And Leonard understood that. He wanted to make sure that he did everything he could for those folks.
Representative Loebsack of Iowa's 2nd District, remembering an American hero, military hero, and former U.S. congressman from Iowa who served 16 years in Congress, Leonard Boswell, who died in 2018. Thank you, Congressman. Thank you.
Thank you. No, thank you very much.
In 2018, we marked the passing of an Iowan who dedicated his life to advocating for those less fortunate, and someone who made a real difference in many, many lives of people with disabilities. Tom Walls of Iowa City died in February. He was 84. He was former director of the University of Iowa School of Social Work. Back in February, I spoke with Iowa City real estate broker Jeff Edberg about Tom's life and his passion for helping the disabled. Jeff served on the board of directors for the Extend a Dream Foundation, an organization that Tom started after he retired.
He was one of the few people I've met that truly cared about the disabled population. He worked tirelessly, hands-on, for this population, and really didn't care about himself that much in the equation. He cared about them. He wasn't looking for fame or glory, accolades. He was looking to help people, and help people he did.
Mm-hmm. And it was really his ideas. He could
Well, think outside the box, to use that phrase, right?
Well, there wasn't really a box for Tom.
not for a 900-pound gorilla.
his method, though, instead of approaching the plight of disabled people as a group, he looked at it as a one-on-one situation. With Extend the Dream Foundation, he started micro-businesses. And so each person would have a business. And one man was a quadriplegic. I still see him around town often. And could operate a computer with a pencil in his mouth, and he would design business cards. And so he had a business. He was self-sufficient. He had pride and dignity and self-respect because of this. You can't buy those. Welfare cannot provide those things, but Tom did. Mm-hmm. There was another young man that Tom got him a digital camera, and he liked taking pictures of insects, particularly squashed insects. And so he would take squashed bug pictures. He had a graphic artist put those on clothing, and he became quite a celebrity with on ties and men's shirts with squashed bug art. He had a bookstore. He had a antique shop. Tom would not take credit for any of this, but disabled people would operate these stores. The proceeds from these stores, much of the goods were donated, went back to disabled people, the community he lives in. He had a class on how to sell products on eBay. So it was taught by disabled people that it was integrated into Iowa City. Anybody could come and learn from this, but it really helped people engage in something they could do from their homes, on the telephone, and again, earn dignity and respect and some money.
What a wonderful legacy that will carry on in the lives of so many people for so many years. People listening, I'm sure there's some out there who will say, thank goodness that Tom Walz was around and had these ideas. He's perhaps best known locally in Johnson County as bringing Bill Sachter in on the scene. Tell us a little short version of Bill Sachter's story.
Bill Sachter was a disabled man who was misdiagnosed and spent 40 years in a mental institution. And Tom, true to form, gave Bill Sachter a job. And he started a cafe called Bill's Coffee Shop, which still exists at North Hall. A full-length featured movie starring Mickey Rooney, for those that remember Mickey Rooney, was produced about Bill's story. He was quite a celebrity. Using that name, Tom started Uptown Bill's. He's went through a couple different locations. It's currently on Dubuque Street in Iowa City, and there's a coffee shop, a bookseller, meeting rooms, and it's thriving. And this goes back to aid disabled people in Iowa City.
Okay, excellent. Jeff Edberg, thank you for helping us remember the loss of Tom Walz. Certainly a loss to Iowa's community, but it's so good that there was a Tom Walz.
Thank you, Ben, for remembering Tom.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Let's remember David Twombly, a teacher, musician, runner, and LGBTQ pioneer. He died in December at the age of 77. He and his partner, Larry Hoke, were one of the plaintiff couples in a very famous case here in Iowa, Varnum v. Breen. That was the Iowa Supreme Court case that brought same-sex marriage to the state. Let's talk with Daniel Hoffman Zinnel. He's executive director of One Iowa, the state's largest LGBTQ organization. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
How have you been remembering David Twombly?
Yeah, I think we've really done a lot to recognize the important work that David, Larry, and all of the other amazing, courageous six plaintiffs have contributed to the movement here in the state of Iowa. And to us as an organization, our organization started focused specifically on marriage equality, and David and Larry played a huge role in the marriage equality case here in Iowa, and we've definitely been trying to talk about him as often as we can, because we wouldn't be the organization we are today without people like him.
Briefly, take us back to that case decided by the Iowa Supreme Court nearly 10 years ago, a decision that made Iowa, I believe, only the third state in the nation to mandate marriage equality in the spring of 2009.
Yeah, our organization started back in 2005, and I've been a lifelong Iowan, and remember, I just graduated high school in 2004 and came out in 2006, and I can remember when I came out thinking I would never have the chance to marry anybody because I just never thought it would be even feasible in my lifetime. I think many of us thought it would be never feasible in our lifetime to have marriage equality. And then we had amazing trailblazer named Sharon Bolero who got our organization started. And part of the process was getting individuals to be part of this case. And so the legal process got started and they spent a lot of time finding the right couples to be part of this marriage equality case. And they found the right six plaintiffs, the right six couples to mm-hmm. be plaintiffs in this case. And David and Larry represented what they called the old guard. And they represented that generation that have been what we call part of the Stonewall era who came out back in the 60s, 70s, who really led the charge. And then in 2009, Iowa became the third state, as you mentioned, which was just amazing for a state like Iowa and the Heartland to pass marriage equality. And it was definitely something that got a lot of attention across the country.
Right. And if we think back nearly 10 years ago, not uncontroversial. This cost three Iowa Supreme Court justices their seats. Are you, I'm amazed. Are you amazed at how much can happen in terms of people's mindsets in just 10 years from that sort of controversy to where we are today?
I think I'm amazed every single day. There are people that continue to surprise me, and I think we're continuing to see people in support of marriage equality. That percentage continues to grow, although it's, I think, potentially a little stagnant, but more and more people are knowing somebody who is gay or lesbian, and I think that's what's contributing to changing people's hearts and minds in support of marriage equality. And I think that shows where we need to really focus the movement on in the future and why it's so important that we focus on transgender and non-binary individuals as part of the movement going forward.
David Twombly's life, his passing last year is a good point to mark his historic role in the Varnum v. Breen case. But tell us a little bit about him otherwise. He was so many other things, teacher, musician, runner. He spent decades at the Clark Community School District. This is in Osceola, teaching band, for instance, and inspiring runners. He was a big runner.
Yes. I think it takes a special kind of person to be a music teacher, especially a band teacher. And as somebody who played an instrument in middle school, high school, and college, it just takes the right kind of person. And I think the thing that struck me most in David's passing is seeing all of the students' comments post on the funeral home's website and on social media. He had a way with the students, and it definitely impacted thousands of them who had the opportunity to really be part of his classroom. And I think that speaks to the character David had. And I spent about 30 years in the Osceola Community School District and had an impact on those young people's lives. And I think that's testament to the legacy, not only for him as a civil rights leader, but just him as a human being.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for stepping into our studio, Daniel Hoffman Zinnel, Executive Director of One IRA, to help us remember David Twombly, who passed in 2018. Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you for having me.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're remembering people we lost in 2018 this hour, especially those who made a real difference in the lives of others. Betty Jean Ferguson is one of those people. Betty was a champion of civil rights who was elected to the Iowa Women's Hall of Fame in 1990 and to the African American Hall of Fame in 2013. Her professional career included work for the Girl Scouts and Head Start, and for nearly two decades, directorship of the Waterloo Human Rights Commission. She died in August at the age of 91. Dennis Reese spoke with Betty in August of 2013 when she was inducted into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame.
African Americans in Iowa who are in their 80s now, and I won't ask your age, have told me that when they were young, they couldn't get into most restaurants here.
That's right. They wouldn't serve service in restaurants.
Was that the case in Waterloo also?
Yes, true all over the state as far as I could tell.
How did that make you feel when you would walk into a restaurant and they said, "We just don't serve you. Well, you'll have to leave." How did you?
The thing is, we didn't walk into restaurants. You knew they wouldn't serve you, so you didn't go there.
But weren't you angry about that overall?
Well, yeah. First of all, I thought the people who did it were kind of stupid.
Okay.
So maybe I took that kind of, I looked at it that way. And I never could understand why they couldn't see that we as human beings had value. And I grew up in a family where my parents were both very involved in the NAACP. And so we usually went with them to local meetings as well as when state conference had meetings on a statewide basis. And I went to several national conventions of the NAACP. So I knew it wasn't just Iowa. This was all over the country and somewhere places it was worse than Iowa. But it was something that I was raised. This is something you got to work on and get changed. And that's what my parents were doing and their friends. And so I grew up with that.
And which high school did you graduate from?
East Waterloo.
East High, and then on to college?
Then I went to my first 2 years of college. I went to a Talladega College, which is a historically black college in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And my father really wanted, because of we had never had a black teacher, and you know, some of the things that, and we could not be in place, and some of the things that happened in the Waterloo schools. He wanted us to have the experience of going to black school. So my oldest sister went there, and she graduated from there. I went there 2 years, and then I transferred to the University of Iowa.
And then, Betty Jean, what did you do? Did you get a teaching job right away?
No, I couldn't get a teaching job. That if I had been an elementary school teacher, I probably could have, but they were not ready anywhere in Iowa at that point to hire a black person teach on secondary level.
Okay.
So I worked for a while for the Recreation Commission and then YWCA. And then I went to Washington, D.C., and I worked for the CIA for a few years, and then I came back. I worked there for about 2 years. And then I came back to Waterloo and went to what we call TC, Iowa State Teachers College in those days. And I finished there.
And what year was that when you graduated from what is now UNI?
It would have been 1952 or 53, somewhere around there.
Right. So in the early 50s in Waterloo, Iowa, with a BA degree, you were not able, they would not hire a black person to teach in junior high or senior high? When did that change?
Well, the first person I know who was black who taught on the secondary level was a girl who was getting her master's while I was getting my bachelor's at UNI, and this town hired her in northeast Iowa, and she taught there for about 2 or 3 years, and then she finally was hired in Des Moines.
What are the greatest challenges facing the black community today?
Well, they're almost still pretty much the same. I think for middle class educated blacks, I don't think there's as much problem in housing as they are. But the thing that really gets me is that lower income blacks, I don't think get the kind of treatment and support and so on that they should get in the schools. Got kids that don't see getting an education meaning anything because they have family members who have not had an education, so that they don't see that as a means to getting somewhere. And there are still a lot of areas where discrimination is in employment exists, and probably one of the worst things that for black males is the way that the legal system treats is terrible. When you look at the percentage of blacks who live in Iowa and the percentage who end up in jail and in prison doing some of the same thing that whites do and don't get sent to prison, you know, it's very obvious that's another way of that the system tries to control, I think, black people, especially black males.
Dennis Reese's conversation with Betty Jean Ferguson, who passed away in August of last year. Well, that was our look back at some of the lives of notable people who passed away in 2018. So many others we didn't have time to mention. I want to mention, of course, former Governor Robert Ray also died this past year. You can find an entire hour of River to River dedicated to Bob Ray's legacy at our website, iowapublicradio.org. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Caitlin Harrop. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. Well, let's go out with a little music of Max Bennett. He was an Oskaloosa native, became a much-in-demand jazz bassist playing with some all-time greats. He died in September of last year at the age of 90. Here he is playing the bass in a tune called Sneaking in the Back. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.